Good evening and welcome to the Auckland Cricket Podcast. My name's Ian Laxon. I am graced by the presence of Jamie Lloyd and PJ Veneman. Welcome, gents.
Good evening.
Hello.
And we are going to kick off with the Black Caps. They're in Australia. Brendan McCullum has just finished smashing Aussie A all over the park, out for 134, I believe. And that's a quite pertinent point because he's just been pasting some of the guys that might actually be playing in that first test, considering the Aussies' injury list. We'll get to that in just a little bit. But let's rip into our predictions. Two tests. First one starts 1st of December, next week today, isn't it? Next Thursday. Aussies coming back after drawing in South Africa. Kiwis coming off, sneaking home over Zimbabwe. What's it going to be, fellas? 1-0, 1-all, 2-0, whitewash? What?
1-0 to Aussie.
Good, you're giving us credit. I thought you were going to go for 2-0.
But both matches will go into the fifth day, which I think is good.
Is the biggest victory for the Black Caps. All right, PJ?
I'm going to be a little bit more positive and say it'll be 1 each, I think. I think we've got a pretty strong batting lineup, and if all the pitchers play dead like the one is today with the tour match, I think we can bat a long time, and might end up getting two draws, that being the case. But I think the Aussies are a little bit wary of Tim Southee, and he's had some good form in domestic cricket. So yeah, Southee might be their new Bond. I know they were always a little bit afraid of him as well, but they rate Southee, so they might be a little bit wary of him. And as you say, Shane Watson, what I've heard recently is that he'll be batting and not bowling, so it takes a little bit of the balance out of that side. And if Mitchell Johnson doesn't play and they bring in another young seamer, they're going to have Cummins and potentially Cutting or Hilfenhaus.
And apparently Harris and Marsh are under injury clouds as well. So it could be quite a different side than the one playing in South Africa.
I mean, it's unfortunate. I would rather, as ridiculous as it sounds, I would rather us go there and play a full-strength Australian team and get beaten than go there and play an under-strength Australian team and win.
I know what you mean, but at the same time, it's so long since we beat Australia. I think it would just be fantastic for our confidence to beat any Australian side.
If we were to beat Australia, no one would remember in 10 years' time that it was an under-strength Australian team. It's a full test match. I kind of feel the same, but I agree with you, Lex, so that we do just need to get a win at some stage on Australian soil.
I think it'd be really good for Ross Taylor as well when he's, only one test match into his captaincy. It'd be good for his confidence in terms of the way he captains and his moulding of the side to get that win early doors.
From the players' point of view, they absolutely could do with a win against whatever Australian side they put out. From a spectator's point of view, I want to see the best players available on both sides.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so where do you think we've got? You mentioned a batting lineup before, PJ. What are our strengths that we can play to over the course of the two-match series?
I think our first three is probably our strength at the moment, just through the form that they have. I like Williamson a lot, and I'm starting to think in the Test arena he could end up being our strongest and most consistent batsman for a long, long time. So I'm confident in our top three. I think Ross Taylor's potentially going to have a lot of nerves, and he's always been kind of a nervous starter. And then we've got Jesse Ryder and Brownlee at 5 and 6. So it's a pretty strong lineup. But I think our top three, if Guptill and McCullum keep playing the way they have been, and if Williamson can be an anchor, then I think it's the strongest batting lineup we've had in a long, long time.
Yep, you agree with that, James?
Yeah, absolutely. Top six is great. Brownlee's obviously born and raised in Perth, so he's used to Australian conditions, which is another advantage. And then, you know, following that strong top six, you've got Vittori and Young, who are both, you know, very accomplished batters themselves, obviously. So yeah, on the batting front, no dramas whatsoever. And one of the, I don't know if it's a positive or not, is those guys will score quickly, so the game will advance rapidly, whatever happens. Either we'll, you know, bash our way to 200 all out, or, you know, hopefully bash our way to 500 for four, you know, in 1.5 days. But as has been, maybe it hasn't been our concern of late, but it's whether we can take 20 wickets is the concern. Although I agree, Southee's a good prospect. Hopefully Bracewell can continue the form that he showed in Zimbabwe. Chris Martin, you never quite know Which Chris Martin's going to turn up, if he's going to take a 5 for or get none for 100. And then the balance of the side will be interesting. Will they risk going in with an extra seamer and perhaps leaving Brownlee out? Who knows? I think they might have to play 4 seamers and leave Brownlee out and, you know, just rely on the fact that we do have a really good top 5. I think maybe it's just our only way to get 20 wickets.
I think it's going to be our biggest problem to get 20 wickets, even though on a Gabba pitch that is usually good for bowlers, but they don't always suit our type of bowlers, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, no, I think Vittori's impact is going to be lessened depending on what types of pitches they roll out for us. They'll probably have a mind to trying to keep Vittori under wraps.
Well, they're usually relatively fast and with a decent amount of bounce at the Gabba, aren't they? Which I guess he'll get some bounce, but he won't get much else.
Well, he doesn't get a lot of turn anyway.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, well, let's cut down to the chase then. If we're going to be positive and say, right, we're going to win a game, what do the Black Cats actually have to do? What things do they really have to nail in the test match to win it?
Score a lot in their first innings. I don't think we can afford, like so often the case, to be chasing the game after we've had a shocker in our first turn at bat. So either we bat first and rack up 400 minimum, or, you know, depending on what's happened in Aussie's innings, if they bat first again, we need to get within at least, I'd say, 75 to 100 runs of their first innings total to have a chance. We can't be, you know, 200 or 150 behind on the first innings.
It's about taking the pressure off yourself, that stuff, really, isn't it?
Yep.
It's saying you put the runs on the board and put the pressure back on them, or you reply in kind when they do. If they do happen to score 350, 400, you don't give them 100, 150 run lead, which we've done far too often over there, and that just piles the pressure on when you've got to come back in and bat and either catch up a lot just to get ahead or chasing a huge total in that.
And I think as far as being able to take 20 wickets, although it's a different game, I think Southie needs to remember the way that he bowled at the World Cup in the one-dayers. When Alan Donald came on board, Southie started to bowl a lot straighter, and Bennett benefited from Alan Donald's tuition as well, because those were flat pitches, not doing a heck of a lot, and they both bowled straight and bowled fairly attacking deliveries. So hopefully Ross Taylor will support that as well and build pressure in the field. But I think I think Southie needs to bowl straight and needs to attack and not just fill in overs.
It's going to be a really good test for Doug Bracewell as well, isn't it? He had a good start over in Zimbabwe, but only a second test match, comes up against Australia. Is he really the next big thing in New Zealand fast bowling or not? But we'll find out pretty quick against those guys, I imagine. Alright, so Australia have just finished a 2-test series in South Africa, and that's really, the end result is pretty much exactly what we'd feared when we heard that there was going to be a 2-match rather than 3-match series in South Africa, isn't it? We're left at 1-1 and everybody wanting a deciding test match. And who on earth decided that they'd only play 2 test matches in South Africa?
Ridiculous.
It is crazy. When you've got, okay, they're not the 2 best sides in the world, but they're probably the 2 sides that many people would want to see. It's crazy stuff. Anyway, very exciting end to that match with Australia. Probably against a few people's expectations, coming back on the last day to win it. What can we take from it, guys? What do you think? Is that they obviously were, you know, shamed in that first test for 47. They bounced back. They batted really well on that last day. Won the second test. Drew the series. Does it mean anything for our series? Or are we just starting, you know, looking to our own game anyway? We shouldn't be worrying about them.
I think the one thing you can take particularly from that test match and even some other test matches and first class games that have happened of late is that if you hang in long enough in the match, so into the last day, kind of anything can happen. I mean, we've seen it with the Aces at domestic level, we saw it with the Black Caps in the Zimbabwe test, that if you just stick at your guns for long enough and you're still in the contest come the last day, and you may have been, you know, under the pump for the whole time, but if you're still alive, there's a good chance that things can swing in your favour, and as we know, cricket can swing dramatically within the space of an hour. And Aussie stuck at it, and then they just found that the batting was a little bit easier on that last day than perhaps everyone had expected, and they were able to get there in the end. I mean, it was pretty close in the end, only 2 wickets, but they did enough, and I think that, you know, the Black Caps can take a lesson from that. They can just stick in it. That's why I hope and predicting that both tests will go into the fifth day, then, you know, all 3 results are still a possibility, and it makes for exciting cricket.
We We haven't done that, for off the top of my head, a lot in the last couple of times at least that we've been over to Australia.
No.
We actually got a test to a fifth day.
No.
Yeah, you leave yourself pretty open for a negative result. All right, PJ, anything to add to that one?
I was curious to see Pat Cummins. Interested to watch him again versus New Zealand. I know there's been a minor war of words wherein someone from the New Zealand side, I think John Buchanan actually, an Australian, has said that they'll be targeting Cummins and that he's a new kid on the block and there for the taking, entirely beatable. And Michael Clark's laughed it off. And yeah, so I'm interested to see how that battle will go. It's always good to see a new player from any country come on the scene and do well. So
I think if anybody's going to do fulfill John Buchanan's prediction, that's going to be Brendan McCullum, isn't it? Just decide, I'll climb into the young rookie. So that would be an interesting, if he did decide to do that.
Mm.
Bounces flying over to the boundary or overslips, depending on how he goes. All right, so let's just wrap up the whole Black Caps with one last thing. This came out today. It was either leaked or given to the media. It's just about the new selection criteria that they're using. This is Kim Littlejohn and John Buchanan in terms of selecting people for the Black Caps. I don't know if you guys have seen this.
Mm-hmm.
And they've come up with some pretty scientific and mathematically based formula. The most important selection criteria is now significant performance at 35%, followed by consistent performance at 25%, contribution to the team 15%, fitness 10%, fielding 10%, and least valuable at 5% is selector's intuition. Now, perhaps not surprisingly, media have picked up on this with a slightly scornful tone, and this is a analytical and overly scientific way of approaching what can be an intuitive kind of process. But can we really accuse New Zealand cricket or deride them for actually putting out some specific criteria there about how they're going to assess and judge people for national selection?
Well, I think it's fair for us as spectators and commentators to assess and judge their methods. I mean, John Buchanan's introduced this. I understand that it's his method, and I can understand how it would work in Australia on their domestic scene with a huge number of players, a massive amount of talent over there. I can understand how this would be used as a way to find the best of that bunch. But in New Zealand, when we don't have those resources, I think intuition should be at least 50%. If you're trying to judge who could potentially be a good player.
But doesn't this provide a template to go back to your player and say, okay, you've achieved here, 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 and here? Or, and especially as they point out to those players that you don't pick, and they go, well, why didn't I get selected? And you go, well, you only got 50% on this bit, you only got 20% on this bit, you need to pick up in these areas and these areas, and then you're in the selection criteria.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of people just going, yeah, well, you're not the right fit for us, I don't think.
I tend to probably look at it from almost the other extreme, and I think that this is quite a simplified selection model. It surprises me that this is a new thing. I would have thought that something like this would have been in place anyway, and I think it's not detailed enough, and they should even go as far as to say things like, okay, who are our test openers, what are our, you know, selection criteria for test match opening batsmen. We want to look at someone who survives longer than their partner 60% of the time, gets past their first 18 balls 80% of the time, once they get to 20 goes on to score 50 or more 80% of the time. Like, really break it down into the, you know, the kind of numbers and the kind of player you're looking at.
But I guess to be fair to these guys, we've only got the overarching thing here.
Okay.
So there might be some more detail behind that, like you're talking about.
What I don't understand is, if you're looking at the team that you've got and potential future selections, how are you weighting someone on this scale who's already in the international team,
mm,
as opposed to someone who's playing on a domestic circuit? I don't understand how those weightings can be the same.
They're not, I don't think. I think that there's a...
Well, this is what I mean, I agree with Jamie. It needs... I'm sure it is a lot more detailed than just that, but...
There's a mention in there of exactly the circumstances in which you're playing and where you get your wickets, for instance. So if you come in and get 5-wicket bag and 4 of them are the 8, 9, 10, 11... that's given less of a weighting than, say, picking up the top 4.
Yeah, I mean, the way that I looked at it, I assumed that this was a way not of gauging the team that you have, but at looking at the players on the domestic circuit and the guys on the fringes and seeing who potentially has the goods to be bought in. And in that regard, I would have thought selectors' intuition should play a hell of a lot of a bigger part than 5% out of...
Well, I think intuition would play a bigger percent when you're comparing two guys who have similar stats, for example. Like, you might have guys who, under this selection model, are relatively similar and maybe, you know, slightly different in two different areas, and that's when the intuition would come in. Like, you might have a Jesse Ryder who, you know, doesn't rate particularly highly in the fitness aspect, as opposed to someone else who rates a bit higher but is maybe not so good on the bowling or whatever. But the intuition of everyone there would be that this guy Ryder, for whatever reason, has got the ability to step up at the international level, whereas the other guy's probably just going to be a quality first class player for the rest of his career or whatever. And that's where I think the intuition comes in and is actually absolutely crucial. I don't think you can use it as a 50% criteria, you know, just before you bring all those stats into play.
Yeah.
Oh, this guy's, you know, averaging 3 with the bat, but we've just got this feeling about him. Like,
yeah.
You know, you can't...
It's basically your casting vote or your tiebreaker kind
yeah,
of
exactly.
effect, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. I still think it's good that they've got that stuff and that they're publicising it. So we will see what comes of it and whether it changes who they pick, how they pick, etc. But that is probably enough on best part of 20 minutes on the Black Caps. So we might move on to something else. And we're going to take it local and start talking about the Aces. One day comp starts tomorrow, actually, the Ford Trophy, as I should be calling it. Auckland will be taking on Wellington. And that, what do we think, fellas? We're defending champs, but can we do it again? Last year, it was a bit of a bat-a-thon for us. What, Lou Vinson got 3 tons, Tim Mack got a couple, Hoppy got one, and we had Andre and I think Daryl Tuffy taking about 30, 35 wickets between them. So sort of in many respects, came down to sort of individuals. Who do you think we're going to rely on this year, and have we got the guys to take it out?
I think you've definitely got the side to go back to back. I think you'd be relying a lot on Andre Adams with the ball, and probably Tim McIntosh again with the bat. Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen a lot of the domestic cricket so far, the Plunkett Shield, but...
haven't been listening to it on Radio Sport?
No, unfortunately, no. Those days are gone.
Yep.
But yeah, I think from what I have read and heard of Auckland's performances this year and seeing the guys that they've brought in, I definitely think that they can do it again.
This could be Dutchie's year, couldn't it? Colin de Grandhomme, 117 the other day, 60 in the last game.
And a zero.
It's going to bring down his 25% consistency.
It is. Yeah, no, I think we've definitely got the capability to go back-to-back. Just a little bit worried with our batting lineup's form at the moment. Obviously, a few of that middle order are yet to get any kind of score on the board. Anaru and Parlane.
Peaks and trough stuff at the moment, isn't
it? Yeah,
it
is. Hoppy's, you know, he's got 170 odd, I think. But hasn't done a lot else. So yeah, I agree with PJ that I think at the top, Tim Mack's going to be absolutely key. I think we've got no problem with the bowlers. We've got plenty of bowlers and a couple of options in the slow bowling department as well. Obviously, Ronnie's come back into the mix. And yeah, you have got the likes of Dutchie and...
Colin Munro
into the middle order there, who bowl a bit and smash the ball all over the place. But I'm just, yeah, a little bit concerned about the form of maybe the top four.
The good news is that in A game Tuesday, Anaru got a 70,
good.
Hoppy got 60, and Colin Munro got just under 50, I think, as well. So,
sweet.
Runs under their belt, at least. So, good luck for the Aces tomorrow against Wellington, and hopefully they get off to a good start.
Well, at least it's a nice, comfy way to start playing against Wellington, because they are mud.
That is true. We should have had them in Plunkett Shield. Talking of Plunkett Shield, yeah, great start. Second on the table after 3 rounds. It is at least 3 seasons, I think, since we're in any kind of position like that. But as we were just saying, it's been a very strange kind of start to the season, because we've had innings like where Guppy got 195, where Dutchie got 117, and the next score was 15, I think, and that was at a total of 400 and something. So Yeah, it's been an uneven kind of performances, even though we've been doing well. So and we won't have Andre Adams for the last six rounds post Christmas either. So we will see. It's what do you think, guys? Think of the new point scoring, the bonus points system.
I like it. Yeah, it means that teams are going after the outright victories a lot more. We've seen more attacking cricket. I think the scoring rates have been up.
There's been a lot
more.
Because
it's all on the bonus points in the first innings. No first innings points, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Points for a first innings win, I should say. And then, yeah, the, obviously maximum points for the outright. So yeah, I think it's been positive.
The good thing, it just stops people betting on in their first innings reply, doesn't it? Just to, you know, somebody scored 450 but taking 2 days about it.
Mm.
You don't just bat right out to the end to get your first innings points.
Unless you're Otago.
Because
they tried to do that yesterday.
But it's like people go, okay, we'll get our bonus points to get to 300, pull out, let's see if we can make an outright out of this. So
yeah.
I think it's really good. The other thing that's come up during the week, which is pretty big news, especially if you're a Test cricket fan, is the news that Test cricket will be coming back to Auckland and back to Eden Park. Not this season, unfortunately, but the following season when England arrive. We don't know exactly which test and what the dates are at this point, but there will be a test at Eden Park. So it's the news that we've been waiting for a long time. So, yeah, it's fantastic. We don't have to get in the car and travel down to Hamilton anymore. So exciting stuff. What do we think about that, though, in terms of watching Test cricket in a stadium that can hold 55,000 people?
Well, it's just in time. It's been announced just in time for me to go overseas. So, yeah, I'm not too fussed. Hey, Test cricket in Auckland, you know, regardless of where it is better than no Test cricket in Auckland. And I've watched some games from the, you know, the empty stadiums of Eden Park, and I still enjoyed it.
Yeah,
it doesn't bother me too much.
I guess if you get bleary-eyed enough, you can just imagine the fans that should be there. So.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's brilliant. We've been crying out for it for a long, long time, and this is supposed to be a dual-purpose stadium that's not getting used for Test cricket. It gets the odd one-day game. It's not used enough. So, I mean, I can understand having Test cricket in grounds where you have a grass embankment and it's not as big, not as many seats to fill. But as Jamie said, Test cricket in Auckland, anywhere it's played, is a good thing.
And I think maybe the Auckland sporting public have, you know, turned a bit of a corner with the Rugby World Cup. I mean, we got obviously filled out most of the games during that tournament. There's been 6,000 or 7,000 turning up to Vector to watch the Breakers play. And then 20,000 turned up to one of the most boring games of football in the history of the sport last weekend. So, you know, maybe we can get 10,000 along to watch a day of Test cricket. Who knows?
The A for Auckland does not stand for apathetic
anymore,
perhaps.
A for awesome.
Yeah, we will see. I think it's fantastic news that it's going to be back, and we're looking forward to it. We'll have a big build-up because it's best part of 15 months away, probably. But that's great. We can do lots of promotion to get a huge crowd in and hopefully keep Test cricket coming back to Auckland year on, year out. So that's fantastic. Let's catch up with a bit more local stuff and club cricket. There was a full round of club cricket last weekend. It was raining runs, well, in some places anyway, out at Te Aritu, most certainly. Pretty bizarre game out there. You'd think scoring 372 for 9 was a pretty good effort and would probably bag you first innings points, no worries, in a two-day game. Probably what Waitak thought, but unfortunately they came up against Uni Ellerslie. 401 for 2 in reply. Mark Ellison on fire again. 192 not out. Barrington Rowland 155. Partnership of 333.
That's a frustrating day in the field.
Yeah, that is a lot of leather chasing. And probably
especially considering it was a Saturday-Sunday game. Oh,
yeah.
So 2 days. Oh.
Very tired boys on Sunday night, I would
yes.
say. And Aaron Jeevans would probably be the most frustrated of them all. He scored 160 out of that 372 for 9 and probably thought that he'd help the side to, I think, their first win of the season. So, yeah, unlucky. A couple of other hundreds out there as well. Phil Traynor in a losing effort for Birkenhead, 123 not out. And Darren Eckford, 102 not out. He's had a pretty good comeback. His Darren stepped off the plane a couple of weeks ago, got 11 wickets in his first two-day game back, and picked up 100 last week. So we're waiting expectantly to see what he pulls out for game three this weekend. Suburbs, his side, well and truly on top because they've got a couple of outrights and they've got a decent lead already, but it's pretty early days after only two rounds of the Hedley Howarth and Tom Hallaby trophies. Right, that is pretty much us for another couple of weeks. But before we go, I should say a thank you and goodbye to Jamie, because this is his last pod. He is leaving us for past his new round the world trip, perhaps cricketing jobs with Cricket France or Cricket Italy, or perhaps playing ice cricket in Canada. Who knows?
Yeah, if you're out there and you need a coach and you're listening in, give me a call.
Yeah. Details on our website. So, but thanks, Jamie, for being part of the podcast. Valued member. Brilliant contributor.
Thanks for having me.
Jacob Oram, ranter extraordinaire. We'll have to have somebody subbing in for those from now on, actually. we'll pick on a new player. So, good luck, mate. And, yeah, we'll miss you. And that is us for another week. And we will catch you in 2 weeks' time. Thanks for listening.